Hi, and welcome to my podcast, Best Practices, Juvenile Justice in Washington. Today's episode, I am going to present all of my research, kind of a quick rundown of everything, and this will be my last episode. My intention was for my daughter Stella to join me for this episode as well, but due to some technical difficulties, I am all on my own speaking into the void. So hopefully I can do this successfully with it just being me. So we're going to get started here in just 1 second. In my last episode, I talked about Colton Harris Moore, a kid that grew up on Camino Island where I live, that wreaked havoc on this island and some of the other nearby islands for years on the run as a teenager and young adult, kind of gaining a cult-like following. And even though his crimes were pretty awful and he did a lot of terrible things, it was almost like he was a superhero for some people. And in contrast, there are so many other juveniles in the state of Washington that have committed far less horrific crimes, and they're vilified. I see these examples highlighting why the state of Washington is headed in the direction they are with juvenile justice. They have had these really great laws providing the state government, with yearly reports outlining the successes of the current system, with recommendations for improvements based on research provided by experts in their fields. And the goal of these has been to focus on continuing with rehabilitation, which basically is mental health services, not only just for the juveniles themselves, but also for their families, in an attempt to help them rehabilitate so that they can be successful members of their communities. And these programs have been found to be very successful on the community level, allowing the juveniles to stay in their homes and allowing the families to kind of rehabilitate along with the kids who've gotten themselves into trouble. And we've seen in reports that Todd Dowell, a state prosecutor, has put out on the juvenile justice system for years, that these programs are having a lot of success and are very popular. The state is doing a good job as far as coming up with new programs and trying to implement these ideas, but where I see there being an issue is that they're asking for communities to take on more responsibility in sentencing and allowing local prosecutors, court systems, and judges to be in charge of how these programs are implemented and who receives them. And the evidence is showing that these programs in some areas are being provided more to white juveniles and not being offered to juveniles that are Black or Hispanic. And instead, those juveniles are being put into facilities, they're receiving longer sentences, and not getting to participate in some of the different programs that are offered through these diversion programs that would provide for mental health services and different services that they'll need to be successful in their lives as they grow up and learn. The programs that are offered in the facilities, in these reports, it's showing they're just not quite there yet. There's a lot of issues with finding the staff, having staff that is trained properly. And these facilities, and you know, when you incarcerate children, you're putting them in a very stressful situation, which oftentimes can do more harm than good. Especially like for females getting put into facilities where they might be exposed to a sexual assault by staff members, or even boys in facilities where they could be exposed to sexual assault by staff members. It's just not a good situation in comparison to what they would get in their loving homes, if that is possible. So with these reports that have been coming out that the state has asked for, you would think, as they say in them, these programs are great, but there's huge disparities amongst the different ethnicities, and this is not okay. Not all these counties are doing these programs correctly. That you would see laws being enacted that would help to solve these issues, because these complaints about the divide amongst different ethnicities is not a new concept. It's been in these reports for years. But yet, in the last couple of years, the governor has focused on signing laws that give judges and these courts more discretion, allowing for them to potentially continue these practices, instead of looking at programs and signing laws that address these issues of inequalities within the programs offered in the state. According to Lee Underwood and Arissa Washington in their article, Mental Illness and Juvenile Offenders, up to 50 to 75% of youth entering the juvenile justice system in the United States meet criteria for a mental health disorder. And approximately 40 to 80% of incarcerated juveniles have at least one diagnosable mental health disorder. There's clearly a correlation between juveniles being incarcerated who are struggling with mental health issues. As we here in Washington take steps to increase the successes of rehabilitation with these services, it is also extremely important that we look at how to offer these services before juveniles become part of the problem in our system. These children need help long before they commit crimes, and they're unable to get these services in a lot of cases until they commit a crime. When we look at the story of Colton Harris Moore, he got in trouble at school, got expelled at a young age. At some point, services were called in to his home because he was being abused and not cared for, didn't have food in the fridge. They determined that he suffered from ADHD and had other behavioral disorders, and he was prescribed medication. And in my research, I read that at one point he was put on medication that really helped. He was doing really well on it. Then the prescription did not get filled, and it just never got followed up on. And he kind of relapsed into having behavioral issues in school again. Had he been helped at a younger age, maybe a lot of the mistakes he made and the crimes he committed wouldn't have been committed. The millions of dollars in damage he caused to personal property wouldn't have happened, potentially. And is that really all of his fault? Does the state hold any blame for not taking care of him before he became such a burden and caused so much trouble? Does this not apply to every child in the state who struggles and needs help? Do we only help them once they've become a burden to the rest of society? In 2019, Melissa Santos wrote an article for Crosscut magazine online talking about a new law enacted, Senate Bill 5290 in Washington, that takes effect July of 2021, that prevents juveniles in Washington from being incarcerated for truancy. Washington has one of the highest rates of incarceration for juveniles for truancy in the country. This has stemmed from a 1995 law called the Becco Bill, which happened in response to a young 13-year-old girl, Rebecca Hedman, who had run away from her foster parents in Tacoma and was murdered by a man in Spokane that she had met out on her own. The goal of the Becco Bill was to provide a resource for parents who had out-of-control children to incarcerate them for their own good and protect them. What we now know is that these incarcerations do more harm than good, and that diversion and therapy and programs in the community are better choices. But we have to recognize that before we criminalize children for truancy, there has to be programs that they can, these parents can utilize, so that we're not criminalizing children who need mental health assistance. As we see these bills happen and our laws change, there's growing pains. There's not much controversy between what's the right choice. Most lawmakers and experts agree that these programs are the most cost-effective and successful programs for rehabilitating juveniles who've committed crimes. Where the arguments lie are how best to transition into these laws and what will provide the best resources for parents and won't overtax our system with these changes. In an article by NPR, KUOW, Lisa Brazil wrote about new laws going into effect for sentencing that prevent minors from being sentenced as adults and lead to ridiculous sentences for crimes committed by children that are bad and dangerous and negatively affect our communities, but also are committed by children. They don't deserve to be locked up for 30 years because they made a mistake when they were 16. And that was what was happening. But now, as we find out, the Supreme Court in the state has ruled that these incarcerations of minors as adults is unconstitutional. But we have over 300 cases of juveniles that are locked up as adults who have been sentenced with these harsher sentences that have now been found unconstitutional. And prosecutors around the state are suggesting that these incarcerations, like, they need to be handled by probation and parole courts, not by the lawyers, because their courts are already overtaxed. So there's going to be some growing pains with changes to the system, but most importantly, it needs to be focused on just keeping moving forward and that these changes are taking place. The stories of Colton Harris Moore and the cases that have led to changes in the law remind us that these are children, and that children make mistakes and that they're acting as they should, maybe a little bit more severe in some cases. In violent crimes, drug crimes are never okay, but we still have to recognize that these are people that don't have fully functioning decision-making brains yet. The state has taken steps to ensure that lawmakers are provided with evidence-based advice for new laws. And these new laws should be based on that advice. These lawmakers need to do a better job of taking the recommendations put forth in these really incredibly and thoroughly done reports and use them for these new laws. It's not okay for there to be a discrepancy between how white juveniles are sentenced and how minorities are sentenced. It is not okay for white juveniles to be seen as some sort of folk hero where black juveniles are seen as just criminals and sentenced as such. All of the children that are in our juvenile justice system deserve mental health services, deserve to be rehabilitated. Creating services that are more readily available outside of the juvenile justice system would help to deter a lot of the crime from even happening. So moving forward, I think there needs to be more laws focused on providing services to families before children commit crime. These need to be integrated into the schools and into the communities and should not require a juvenile to cause damage or violence in their communities before they are offered help. This is going to wrap up my podcast. Thank you for taking the time to listen. And this will be my last episode. So thanks. It's been fun. Take care.